Hello again. This is between consensus and conspiracy podcast. I've got to remember because I get mixed up whether it's consensus or conspiracy and consensus. I think I've just been thinking. This is I'm Jeremy. This is my brother Julian, and we just do a podcast where we chat about stuff. If anyone's interested. Some are, because I think there's some listeners, but I was going to say, I was thinking today that the name Between Consensus and Conspiracy is probably apt for now, isn't it, for today, just trying to work out where the truth is, you know, because it's sort of like, there does seem to be loads of conspiracies doing the rounds, and you don't want to get close to them, but some conspiracies do end up being true, so it's trying to sort the wheat from the chaff, and then also trying to find where the truth is, because it's hard, isn't it? You know, and there's so much pressure for anyone who strays off what consensus is that often it seems like social media is there to bully people into consensus, and I don't think the answers are always there. So it's that constant trying to find where stuff is. So we probably talk crap from time to time, but we're just looking to find where the truth lies, with me personally. And I just wonder, you know, I sometimes think, I was thinking the other day, remember that Lawrence Fox, we talked about him briefly before, you know, the guy on Question Time, who was talking about privilege, white privilege.
Yeah.
And the bit we were talking about was in the film, wasn't it? What was the film, the First World War film?
1917.
Yeah, 1917, and he made the comment about a Sikh soldier, and his argument was that if we keep putting people into films just because we want diversity, which is a good thing, but it can be distracting to a story kind of thing. And he got a bit of stick, and I didn't know. I knew there were loads of people from the colonies that were in the war, but I didn't know. I would have thought they would have been in their own battalions rather than interspersed with other battalions and stuff, but it got a bit of a discussion going, didn't it? And I was thinking at the time that we're all allowed an opinion, but our opinion is based on the information we've got at the time, and then over time you get different information or more information, which should allow you to then change your mind if the information that you get later could builds up to proving you wrong or shifting slightly. So I that's the worry that I had when we did a podcast, was that you might say something 6 months ago, and then if someone then goes to re-listen to it today with a load more information that we didn't have at the time, you can end up looking like a bit of a dick. But I'm more than willing to change my mind when things change. So and things are changing so quickly today that you say something today, and two days time, you know, new statistics could come along to prove you wrong, couldn't it? So it's just a bit of a funny time, isn't it, at the moment? How are you? How are you coping?
Yeah, all right. No, all good. The lovely weather helps, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think we've got a bit of a bad run coming up. I've just been a bit late because I've been helping my daughter make choc chip cookies. I've run out of product for my hair. I've run out of wax, so I was either going to get the clippers or I was going to grow it, but I'm looking more like what's his name out of The Cure every day, Robert Smith, every day. So I was thinking it's got to be one of the two, so I've got a happy medium. I thought I'd wear a hairband. listeners can't see it, you can see it. But because the only person in the household that's got a hairband is my 7-year-old daughter, so it's pink. So emasculation has well and truly kicked in this coronavirus. All masculinity's gone. You know what I was thinking? A little bit of, you know, just from what we finished last week, it's been bugging me. I cocked up the Winston Churchill saying. And it was during times of war, sometimes a bodyguard, that the truth should be protected with a bodyguard of lies. And I cocked it up. I missed out the last bit. And I realised after I said it kind of contradicted a lot of what we say. Because we started off the podcast. My mate Dominic pointed it out, but I'd thought about it anyway. But we started off the podcast about wanting honesty and being treated like adults. You know, when we were talking about masks. Instead of saying we don't need them, knowing that we do need, that they are a benefit, but I didn't want them used when the hospitals need them. So we were saying that we kind of want truth, and then finished it off with the Churchill thing. Sometimes at the time of war, I think they call it the noble lie, don't they? Sometimes it's good to lie to a population if it keeps their spirits up. And I was wondering, can you have it both ways? You know, that's a bit of a moral question, isn't it? Whether or not, you know, you do want total honesty. But if total honesty gets the spirits down, what's the point? You know, where's the answer to that? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, that in relation to the whole mask thing, yeah. I don't know if that led on from it, but it is the case, isn't it? That was my gripe with it, and I got a new gripe this week as well.
All right.
I mentioned to you yesterday, didn't I? I think it kind of links into the same thing. I go off that Johns Hopkins website, I think a lot of people are checking it, that Worldometers.
Yeah.
And that's got a list of all the countries in the world, and supposedly there's over 220 countries in the world now that have been affected by coronavirus.
Yeah.
And lots of them have got thousands of cases.
Yeah.
But that is noticeable. It's only kind of like five or six. I think if you take into account percentage of deaths by percentage of population.
Yeah.
The top country at the moment is actually Belgium. Belgium hardly gets spoken about. It's got a high density population. But if you're just looking at numbers of deaths, it's like there's five countries: USA, Italy, Spain, France, and the UK. And of 220 countries in the world that have got coronavirus, those five countries account for 75% of the deaths. And I kind of look at this thing, and I've been looking at it for about 6 weeks now, and I mentioned it from the first podcast we did about this about 3 weeks ago, that I'm worried always going to kick off in the third world and these highly densely populated places like South Africa and Bangladesh, and when they get it, it'll be horrific, and certain parts of South America, and it just hasn't happened.
Yeah.
It's not come with the same speed as we're getting it. So, again, it's that kind of like, what's going on there? I mean, that kind of thing, when you notice it,
yeah,
it's kind of hard to unnotice it, and it's also the kind of stuff that is ripe for conspiracy theory, isn't it?
Yeah, of course it is, yeah.
Makes any sense. It doesn't makes no sense to me if this thing is as I'm sure, look, it's probably, like I mentioned to you, it's probably down to the fact that we, in those five countries and throughout Europe, probably in the West, in general, we probably have been over-prescribing those deaths to coronavirus, and I'm sure a lot of other countries are maybe under-reporting. So I understand that it's probably something to do with that. It's got quite a blatantly big difference. 75% world deaths of five countries out of 220 in the world. My point being that. Again, I don't hear much talk about that and how the massive discrepancies that different countries have for reporting this thing.
Yeah.
And I was talking to my father-in-law, and he was saying, well, you can't tell people, because otherwise if you told people that the statistics don't mean anything, then they wouldn't believe the statistics. And it's the same thing, isn't it? But I want to have the honest adult conversation.
Yeah.
I want to have the conversation of like, all right, okay, we're probably getting bullshit from most countries, and we're probably getting a different version of it from us in America and France. But I'd like to have that conversation. Instead, we don't have any conversation about that, and it just leaves kind of voids where there shouldn't be, I don't think.
Well, I just think maybe there's too much conversation on certain subjects, but there seems to be a lot of heat and not a lot of light. It doesn't it? I mean, I look at some of those press conferences and I switch off so quickly. And I know people criticise the politicians often, but you've got to criticise the questions as well. You know, it's all kind of who's to blame? Where's this going to happen? Who's going to do that? And then all of a sudden, you know, Those two work together. If you're going to criticise the politicians, which I believe that's a valid criticism, you've also got to criticise the structure of the media that was always looking for a gotcha moment. And I don't think the public want a gotcha moment. I think they do want a bit of enlightenment. That doesn't mean that there isn't criticism due. But I just think it's really difficult to know what figures are at the moment anyway. And that's because the thing is, who's getting tested? What's the quality of the testing? Because a lot of the tests we got from China didn't work. So many people that I know have got symptoms, but they haven't got tested and they're at home. So do they go on to the figures? And then people dying or infected in homes aren't being counted either, in old age pensions homes. But so you wonder whether or not... Is that the same for all around Europe? Is there a common set of measuring standards? But as you say, I mean, you look at China. There's no one died in Tiananmen Square, according to China, whereas the world knows that they did. So for sure, they're not to be trusted with their figures. I said 3 weeks ago about Putin was giving it as if he was one man holding back the virus. He was a real hero.
Yeah.
Now all of a sudden. Because what I found interesting as well was that Italy didn't get very much help from Europe. So the Chinese and the Russians went to help. So Chinese and Russians were helping in Italy. And the Russians have been called back. And the Chinese have just said that their new spike is solely from people coming from Russia. Yet Russia weren't meant to have any. Yet all of a sudden their new spike is from people coming from Russia. But I think now I'm hearing that Russia has got an issue. But Turkey was another one who didn't want to shut anything down, did he? And then the figures are incredibly low. India's another place. But you're right. We expected a massive tidal wave in that part of the world, and it just doesn't seem to have happened. I mean, I read an interesting article about Africa, because they were talking about why the infection rate and the death rate in Africa was so low. And they were talking about different possibilities. And one was the population is much younger in Africa. The average person in you look at Nigeria, even though the growth rate is growing massively quickly, it's a very very young society. So there's fewer.
I think the average age in Nigeria is like 19. Isn't
it? Something like that. So there's fewer older people, and also they think maybe the heat might have something to do with it, because maybe it just doesn't go that spread as much in the heat, and also and also finally the other point was that they do take a lot of malaria medication, so maybe that in their system is protected. The point of it is, it's so complicated, and we're so early on for anyone to be looking at figures today and say, look, this is evidence we're a success, or this is evidence we're a failure. I think is judging a football match 10 minutes into the game, in my opinion.
We're only going to be able to judge any of this in like 1-2 years time, aren't we? And probably not going to be able to judge anything. It's kind of a fog of war thing, isn't it? It's just like the truth gets lost, isn't it? It was kind of striking to me. Yeah, I understand that there's so many reasons for it: population density, and heat, and diet, and smoking, and loads of different
genetics as well. Probably.
Obesity. I've heard is a big part of it. Obviously, age. I mean, it's one of the main things, isn't it?
Yeah.
But that was just when I looked at that last night, and I kind of thought, wow, that's just such a big discrepancy.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense that five countries can have 75% of the deaths.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Well, it is. I mean, the other thing was last week, it was weird because I was trying to see how China are getting off the hook a little bit. See, China, again, we've got to be careful, because I'm good at spotting traps, but less good at seeing where I might fall into them. So it depends on where you get, there's always going to be a bit of an imbalance of your sources of information. So I've seen a lot of criticism towards China. But there is also a lot of praise in a way, because they are using, I think it's PR, but they are going around the world trying to lend equipment, send people that are already kind of got knowledge on the subject to try and help in other parts of the world. However, on the other side of the coin, early on, when their whistleblower came out, he ended up dying, didn't he? He ended up getting punished and dying early on. And then I couldn't believe how we missed out so many criticisms about China, about how they treat wildlife in general. You know, like all the animals that are nearly extinct. When you want to grind down a rhino horn because some old Chinese fella up in the hills believes that mixing it in with something else will give him a stiffy. You know, all that sort of nonsense that goes on. What, then there was also intellectual property, the way that they kind of like on the backs of all sorts of innovation in the Western world, sort of like nicking all that information, which is something which they never envisaged when they allowed them in for the World Trade Organization. But also places like Tibet, you know, where has all that gone? How they could just go into a country, a peaceful country, and then barbarically try and eradicate all sorts of belief. So all these things should be left-wing tick boxes, shouldn't they?
What was it? Only yesterday it came out, the whole Chinese McDonald's thing. Did you hear about that? In some industrial city.
Oh, right.
Where they put signs up saying black people weren't allowed in.
Oh, no. Because
supposedly the rumour going around the town that Africans spread coronavirus.
Yeah.
And there's stories of like hundreds of Africans just getting kicked out of hotels, kicked out of the places they rent, and just being like third class citizens.
Yeah.
And it's just silence, isn't it? It's bizarre. It's constant to me. I mean, I've not brought up many times on this, but it's that constant hypocrisy.
Yeah.
By the left, that they don't talk about certain things. They won't talk. They won't be outraged by stuff like that. They won't be outraged by the Muslim camps, the re-education camps or whatever they are, supposedly ending up to 2 million people there. They won't. But Donald Trump says the wrong thing and he's the worst, bigger racist in the world. It's bizarre. It's very strange.
Well, I just don't think it's that. No, because this is my opinion, I just think it's all a bit of a guise, isn't it? I don't think that's what it is. I think it's more about the perpetrators. They've got a certain worldview and they're only interested in things that kind of back up their worldview. Anything that counters it, they don't. You know my opinion. I think any sort of racism or ism is just human nature. It's not just one-way traffic. You know, the Chinese, Indian people used to be racist to black people when I was kids. I used to see African West Indian conflict. You're now seeing Chinese black people. You saw Zimbabweans getting mistreated in South Africa. Nigerians and South Africans having issues. I just think if it wasn't colour, it'd be something else. It's always religion, class, age, you know, whatever it is. We've always find it's the way our brains
like the
work.
Bloods and the Crips, it's like just whatever straight you're born, isn't it? You
know? No, and I also wanted to get it on record as well, because I think I've been a bit, again, I fall into a bit of a trap. Me and you listened to a couple of podcasts early on, didn't we, which I think freaked us both out. I think there were two Sam Harris podcasts. This was before it all got scary, wasn't there? There was two Sam Harris's and one Joe Rogan one. And it all kind of was a real wake-up call, because I thought, bloody hell, this could be bad. You spotted it before me, didn't you, I think? And in those podcasts, spoke, you know, there was virologists that were putting out that the conspiracy theory that this was a man-made virus was not possible. Because basic genealogy could look into it and you can see where it evolved from. So it definitely wasn't. So then there was the conspiracy that was going around that Wuhan, there was a biological arms place, research centre in Wuhan. And it's all a bit of a coincidence that that's where it came from. And I always thought that was a bit far-fetched. So I think on a couple of interactions on Facebook, I'm kind of quite dismissive about that sort of thing, as I was with the what 5G or whatever it was, because there is no connection. But I think what's happened since is I have moved a little bit, because there are from a couple of sources, not on the 5G but on the China stuff, and it's just from a couple of really trusted sources that have made me think a little bit differently. It's definitely not man-made, and I don't think it's a weapons thing that either. I think what it was, there was a virology lab where they study viruses. And that makes total sense, because if you've got, you know, you had SARS, MERS, W5, not W5, it's my bloody postcode, but you know what I mean, the other one. So they knew a lot of these things were going around, so it's obvious that you need to study those things. So it could well be that they were studying it in those labs, and then the, not so much security, but the safety record or whatever, the safety rules that they may well have had to abide by may have been a little bit lax, and somehow it might have come out on an individual. And there's a few people saying that that is a possibility. Again, I don't know, I'm not there, I'm not qualified, but it kind of, you know, there is a bit of a coincidence that that was happening in the same place, so it's a possibility, isn't it? And that was reported by a couple of people that I trust, but so I'm not totally dismissive. I still don't think it was man-made, and I don't think it was done purposely to unsettle markets and stuff like that, because I don't think you'd... It's like trying to set fire to your next-door neighbour's house, isn't it? And then expecting you to be all right. I don't think anyone's that... Well, I don't think any leader of a country is that stupid.
But... Yeah, we hope that they're not that bad. Yeah, no, I'm with you there. A couple of months ago, when it first started off in China, it was like, the Wuhan... lab thing that I know existed, but I've heard a few people talking about it recently, saying that the first, if not the first person, definitely a big percentage of the first kind of 5 or 10 cases supposedly never had any contact with the wet market at all.
And that supposedly
that's on record. It wouldn't surprise me. There's a lot of stories of this stuff, the animals being tested in the lab and then getting sold to the market afterwards. That story's going around.
It's hard, isn't it? Because you don't know what to believe. I did read that there is a new Chinese cure for coronavirus now being advertised in certain parts of China, and it's a bear bile cure. So now they're getting bears taking the bile out of their insides, which is an incredibly painful process, either killing bears or just doing it while they're alive, because that's a cure. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, we should be able to, we should be, as a species, be able to criticise that without being called racist. You know, some of the stuff that has gone on there and is going on there is absolutely horrendous. And I think there should be worldwide pressure. I don't believe in this moral relativism that, we should let them be because they're just a bit different to us. It affects us. You know, I read a statistic the other day. Over 80% of the world's workforce are either in not working or doing fewer hours. That's affected over 80, I think it's 81 or 82% of the world. This is unprecedented. We haven't got, you know, so they shouldn't be beyond criticism.
No, absolutely not. No, it's nonsense, isn't it? I mean, look, we're at the moment, I think we're all living in kind of dream world of like, getting paid a certain percentage of your wage and sitting at home and the weather's nice and it's nice and you're with your family.
Yeah.
But my worry is that like 6 months from now, it's going to be a fucking nightmare.
Well, they're talking about it being, they're talking about not being a recession, but a depression. You know, the World Trade Organization. Yeah. You know, these are words that are being spoken about now. And if people don't realize the bigness of that, you know, they often lead to wars and stuff like that. Depressions often, depressions and wars tend to go together. You know, I don't know. I don't. You know, I think there's dangerous times. I wonder whether or not we will go back to normal. I mean, a lot of people are putting things out there that the pressure will be for us to go back to normal. And I get that, because normal's what got us here, yeah? You know, as a species, we've gone through plenty of amber lights over the last 20 or 30 years. And then all of a sudden, we've ignored those amber lights. And now it looks like we've taken a bit, we've had a bit of a crash. But you know, from the Joe Rogan podcast that we heard, the second one, which is more positive, he made the point there are quite a few Aryan, white blonde hair. Well, they're bird ones. Avian, not Nazi, but bird ones. But avian ones, that if they were to cross species, they could have a 40 to 60% death rate, mortality rate, not the 1 or 2%. So they're out there. So we need to be prepared. So maybe this has just given us a bit of a wake-up call. So in a way, I always say that, you know, good news often becomes disguised as bad. You just don't know. Sometimes you've got to step away a little bit to understand the goodness. And if it's woken us up to the fact that there might be some nasty stuff on the horizon, then maybe it's a blessing in disguise. But I think...
Yeah, people...
Sorry, mate, what did you say?
No, I agree, yeah, 100%. I don't know, I do wonder about that whole kind of, this will change us and the way we live. I don't know, if it's not too horrific financially,
yeah,
and fingers crossed, kind of like look forward to a year and a half's time and they've got some kind of cure for it.
Yeah.
But we can stop the social distancing and wearing masks and not going out. Over the next few years, it kind of goes back to normal to a degree. I think we're where we are for a reason, aren't we? Where we are because we all either like it or it's convenient or it suits certain people.
Yeah.
So I think we'll probably, I think the easiest thing to do is try and get back to normal. But I think most people would push for that. Yeah, but my big worry is that the knock-on effect will be pretty bloody grim. Well, I mean, I'm in the hospital industry. I don't know. I don't see people travelling on planes for the next year or so.
No,
you know, like, and it's not. So luckily, I work in a good company, and they're kind of help keep us on for now. But I'm sure there's a hell of a lot of hotels out there that are going to go under.
Yeah.
And then you wonder, well, when is that? When is that going to get back to normal? And how? And who's going to reopen those hotels? And how much money is there? I mean, you look at every day on the news, there's a different company going under.
Yeah.
And that kind of, well, how much money have they got in reserve to get them through how long, you know, before it all starts going tits up?
Yeah.
And it's a domino effect, and it's a concern.
Well, my wife works in theatres as well, you know, and that's going to be the last place that people go to. Any sort of events, music, comedy, theatre. Yeah. And who's going to want to get on planes?
Yeah.
You know, if you think that I think people are paranoid. I mean, I'll go running in the mornings and I've seen a definite change in people. You know, I used to go running and you'd often catch someone's eye and smile. Now no one even wants to look at each other anymore. Everyone just looks away if you get close to people.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Someone said good morning to me the other day. It was like Crocodile Dundee on the tube, you know. You know what I mean? Good day, mate. It was like come someone saying hello, and it's like, who's he talking to? Who's he not talking to me? And you look down, you just feel awkward, you know. So I do worry that it might have changed us a little bit in that sense. But I hope we might be able to get back, maybe.
I think it has now. I think it has with so much that's going on. I mean, I noticed that my first realisation of it was probably just before we had the lockdown in the UK, and I was kind of in... I had a few days off from work, and I was in touch with work colleagues, and it was noticeable how... Well, what surprised me was, like, talking to people in work, talking to people, like, friends, neighbours, it was noticeable how quick people wanted to go into lockdown.
Yeah, it's true.
They almost wanted to be saved from it, you know?
It's true, but even now, if they're talking about how we're going to get out of it, people get really angry that you're even having that discussion.
Yeah. And going back to like people, how people have changed. Yeah, one of my friends told me a funny story yesterday. I was talking to him. I think he's gone right down the rabbit hole and really kind of thinks it's a big conspiracy and whatever. But regardless of that, he's cycling around at night, and he says, I try and chat to people at night, whoever I come across, to ask them how many people they know have had it, because he thinks it's a big con and whatever. And he said he went up to this group of kind of young, kind of thuggish looking lads. And he said, usually I wouldn't go and talk to them across the room. Okay, do you know what I mean? So I've gone up to him. And he says, yeah, have you heard about this coronavirus stuff? And they started walking faster, and I'm like, no, about this coronavirus. And they just ran away from me.
Yeah, but you would, wouldn't you, if someone starts talking to you? You heard about that coronavirus bowling towards you? I don't know. I don't know, but I do think that, you know, maybe we're opening our eyes to understanding of how much more connected we are. You know, maybe we're waking up with, you know, this global warming stuff as well, or whatever they call it now. But you know, but what we do over here does have an effect over there. Maybe that sort of stuff is waking. Maybe that thing is waking us up to the fact of how connected we are, and the behaviour of someone in China eventually has an effect over here. I listened to a really good podcast today about this is another bit of hypocrisy. You know, that middle class hypocrisy about a new book that's come out of a guy who went to Colombia about cocaine. Dealers and cocaine production and stuff like that, and how that's all connected. You know, you've got these people that wouldn't eat an egg unless it was free range. You don't think twice about sniffing a line of coke up their nose. That you could probably link the amount of deaths per gram that's sold in the UK. But don't bat an eyelid. You know, it was talking about how people, farmers in certain parts of Colombia, for years had productive farms in their family, but all it takes is one person to start growing coca leaves, and then it upsets the whole financial system. So to be able to compete, then that land becomes more you know, productive financially, and then everyone has to just to keep up. And then all of a sudden, poor people in Venezuela are being dragged in, young girls are being dragged into prostitution. So young girls are being prostituted in those areas because then hitmen develop, and then now they've got a patron saint for hitmen, who say, all right, but you're meant to be religious. How can you justify going to kill people? And it's like, oh right, well, because if that person wasn't to be killed, then God wouldn't allow it. But if God does allow it, then it must have mean they've done something wrong and I'm doing God's work, you know. It's the same sort of like cock and ball, using any sort of religion to justify any sort of nonsense. But, you know, there is a connection between what's going on in that part of the world and your behaviour here, surely. You know, you can't.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the whole thing of that, you know, I always thought that you know, they call it child porn. It's not child porn. Child abuse and all that sort of stuff online. And the thing is, if you get done for it just for having the photos, even though you haven't abused them people, there is an assumption of guilt because you're part of a market that allows those children to be abused. So that could surely be a similar argument for any sort of drug trade or whatever it is. And look, and I don't want to be a hypocrite. You know, I'm not going to pretend here that I'm a saint because I'm not. But I'm just wondering whether or not we can be a bit more honest and look at how we could make the world a better place. Because I do, you know, I know you're saying go back to normal. I think we do need an element of normality because you're right. Some of the things have evolved because that's what we like. But I do think that's just... I'm not into revolution. I don't think revolution's the answer, but I do think we need to evolve to be a bit better. I think there's definitely room for that. And I mean, just finish off, I've just been watching a lot of stuff on biology. I've really quite liked biology, and I always wished I would have done it more at school. But there was a good Horizon documentary on last week, and you've been listening to Brett and Heather Hayling, you know their podcast? Huh. It's called the Dark Horse Podcast.
I haven't listened to any of them, no.
Haven't you? Yeah, they're two biologists. They're a husband and wife biologists. So they've been a lot of it goes over my head. But he made the point that a virus has two purposes. One, to survive into the future and reproduce. And it's not designed to kill. You know, it's designed to find a host. Yeah. A virus that needs a host. It can't survive on its own. So they find ingenious ways to kind of spread. And I don't see how you can look at that and, all right, the results can be ugly sometimes, but I don't see how you can look at that and not see it as a thing of absolute beauty. If you're looking at nature, if you're looking at evolution, because it's the fastest... the example of evolution. I mean, it's that Darwin didn't understand this, didn't have the knowledge of viruses, bacteria at the time that he wrote it. But, you know, for him to say this is evolution at its fastest rate. You know, in animals, evolution is so slow, isn't it? But when you look at viruses and bacteria, it's incredible. I was just thinking, because... we haven't found, we've only found a cure for one thing, and I think that's not a cure, but we've only been able to eradicate one, smallpox. Everything else we've just learned to live with. So all this criticism about herd immunity, that's all we ever do. So what will happen is you either have a natural herd immunity because your body finds a way of fighting a certain bacteria or virus, like the common cold. You never get the same common cold, because what happens is once you've your body's fought off the common cold, your body can resist the common cold. So what happens is the common cold or the flu then evolves slightly, it changes slightly, and then because it comes back to you, the old antivirals in our body doesn't recognise the new one slightly, and then you get ill, and then the newer ones come along and recognise it, and then you're immune for that one until something else changes slightly. So then you look at AIDS. Of AIDS used to kind of like, it was so difficult to fight, because as soon as you found a cure, it would I can't even think of the word, but it kind of grows and grows and grows so quickly. So you find something that fights some of the ones that are there, but by the time you found that, there's loads more. So it's always very, very difficult to fight. And then you start looking at how smallpox. What happened was they more or less eradicated smallpox, and they only had two tiny bits of smallpox that they wanted to keep, because if it ever came back, they needed that to be able to create a vaccine. So there were only two vials of it that were kept. One was in Russia and one was in America. But they keep studying it. And what was they with World Health Organization, they were going to try and get rid of it at the same time, so it was all gone from the earth. But as science gets better, they're finding more and more about how that virus works by still studying it today. So why would you want to get rid of it? You know, the moral question is, do you get rid of it so then it can never ever come back again, you hope, or do you keep it to learn more about future things that come? It's so incredible, George. They were saying that what a virus, look, this is really simple terms, but what a virus does, it sends little probes to go and attack the human cells, but the human cells will send out probes to kind of block the smallpox probes, and then kind of take them without it hitting the cell. But then what happened was the smallpox then developed a way of sending fake probes that the human probes would get, and while the human probes were then distracted with the fake ones, the real ones would come. So every time you find, you know, and then attack the cells, and then all of a sudden you've got the illness. And it's just the complexity is absolutely amazing. And you listen to those two talk, as I say, so much of it goes over my head, but there is a real beauty with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, what was the ones when we was kids? Rabies. Were you too young to when rabies was a thing?
No, I remember it, because I remember, I always had this fear that, I don't know why, go on holiday to France for a day trip, you'd end up getting rabies.
Yeah, well, because I remember the issue.
It was as though we were this island that didn't have rabies and all these other horrors. It's funny, isn't it? Because it's kind of a different world in a way. Because when we were growing up, you didn't really, I'm in the 40s, but you didn't go on, holidays weren't as big a thing, were they?
Yeah, no. No.
Most of our holidays were spent in the UK.
Yeah.
Nowadays, it's like, well, I take my kids, well, in normal times, I take my kids abroad on a plane 4 or 5 times a year. But it was a much more kind of, luxurious experience, wasn't it?
What, on boats? Was that because of rabies you had? That was rabies paranoia. It scared the life out of me, rabies, because you'd see rabid dogs, and there'd be adverts of rabid dogs, I'm sure, humans or dogs frothing at the mouth. But that was pretty amazing, wasn't it? That was a bacteria or a virus that had to spread through saliva. So what it does, it managed to send the dog mental and froth at the same time. So what it would make the dog rabid, so the dog would then attack people, so then it could get into people through the saliva and the blood. And it's just, you know, so many of them. I mean, this coronavirus is ingenious, isn't it? Because I think the other one was it MERS or the other? I can't remember the first one that came. It killed people too quickly. That was it. It killed people too quickly, and the symptoms came as you were contagious. So what happened was, because they realised that... SARS. So when they realised it was happening, they could quarantine people that showed the signs really quickly, so it wasn't able to spread. So now it seems like it's mutated, so that there's a two-week, roughly, period where you are contagious, but you see you show no signs. So in all that time, that's when you're able to spread it, and that's why it's spreading so quickly, and that's how it's worked out a way to affect us. And then I read the other day that they're talking about checking the sewage because they think they would be able to tell the amount of it in a population by checking the sewage in the system of that population. So you should be able to, if you get into the sewer of a city, you'll be able to tell roughly the percentage of people that have had it in that city.
Well,
pretty mad where we're going, isn't it? When you do it,
that's quite a complex thing in itself, isn't it? Good God, where would you start with that?
No, I know, that's what I mean. Look, it's changing daily. It's changing daily. So I just find it really, really, really quite amazing, really. I mean, what I was worried about the podcast a bit was I don't really listen to the news anymore. I listen to podcasts, but I don't listen to phone-ins or news and stuff. It's too much political point scoring. The other day they were asking Dominic Raab, have you got the ability to sack people if you want to when Boris is in a hospital? It's like, is it seriously? Are these the questions you want to ask? There's a global pandemic and you're asking hypotheticals. So so I don't listen to the news so much, but I do watch documentaries and podcasts and things like that, and people with biologists. So there might be stuff that I'm missing that's going on because I can't be bothered to listen to all the crap and all the argument or all the point scoring. But I do find it a fascinating time. And then Boris was ill when we were... That was another big thing. We'll finish off in a minute.
That was a bit of a weird one, wasn't it? I mean, that was quite a kind of like... I think it hit a lot of people. I remember that night. I didn't have a very good sleep that night.
I'm the same,
It was a bit of a... and he's better now, it's fine. But it was a bit of a strange one in the sense that it was almost a bit crap, really. And so, but I think a lot of people had a feeling of like, fuck me, if he goes, we've had it.
I know. It was quite sobering, wasn't it? It was quite sobering.
He's such a kind of figurehead.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like someone like him or someone like the Queen, you'd be fucking... I think it'd affect a lot of people if they got it and went down with it. And I mean, it's not a good position to be in, is it? Like when if you put all your bloody eggs in one basket for someone like Boris and suddenly he's out there, then you're looking at bloody Michael Gove or
Dominic Raab, wasn't it? Dominic Raab looked shell-shocked.
He looked like a rabbit in the headlights.
He looked shell-shocked, didn't he? He looked scared. Yeah, and you know what it was? You know what it is? You know when you're on a plane and you hit turbulence? The first person... I just look for the people who work on the plane. If they're scared, I'm scared. Yeah. But if they're all right, I'm not. So what it was, you look at Dominic Raab and you just thought, I think this does look serious, doesn't it? But you're right, it is a figurehead. And that was why it's quite sobering. I get that there's a lot of people that detest Boris. I get that, right? And, you know, a lot of them are friends of mine who I respect. So I get that. But I just, I had the sort of sleep that I had on a Thursday night after a referendum or an election. You know, you wake up in the middle of the night, first thing in the morning, you want to check your phone. Just in case something bad's happened and all you've got is a load of idiots saying it's a fact. That's another one, wasn't it? That's, you're getting that now, that he wasn't really ill and it was just done to take our eye off the ball. But anyway, I don't want to entertain the idiots. I think it was a worrying time. I think it was quite a sobering time because you're right, it was a figurehead. And I think a lot of people got scared, you know. And the thing is, because it is quite a scary time and you did think if it can hit him, it can hit anyone.
Yeah.
I also found it odd
something like that, you know. I think if he'd have gone down, that would have hit the markets. Yeah. That would have I know the markets have been fucking trashed as it is, but I think that would have really done some damage, you know. And and coming from, I think it's a crap position for us to be in.
Yeah.
That he's one that most people look to.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, no, I get that.
The bloody the Messiah, is it? It's like
no.
But for a lot of people, I think he was. I think there's a big percentage of the country that look at him as the kind of like. Well, there was a lot of hope after that December election. I'm not saying me or you or us.
Yeah.
I'm saying for a lot of people, there was. He was kind of the one that's going to get us through Brexit. He was going to, you know, he was going to lead the way into our next step. Yeah. I think it would have been a shock for a lot of people. But anyway, yeah, he's all right now.
Yeah. Look, I don't think he's a big decision maker. I think there's a whole machinery that looks after us. You know, I listened to a really good podcast about Cobra and about the whole machinery that kicks into force, and that really gave me confidence, because it's not, you know, a lot of people that are there aren't even, they're not Labour or Conservative, they're just dedicated civil servants, you know. So I think there is a big system behind. But yeah, I just think it's a psychological blow, isn't it? It's like a football team lose your captain. You know, you're up against, you're in the fight of your life, in a final or whatever it is, and you lose your captain early on. I suppose, look, why don't we finish off with another Churchill? We started off with Churchill, finished with Churchill. I suppose it was the same time in the Second World War when we were during the Blitz. They did everything in their power to save St. Paul's, because a large majority of central London could look out of their window and see St. Paul's. So every day that you were getting bombed and you're down in the subways and the tube station, you'd come out and every day you'd see St. Paul's and you thought, we're okay. Because he knew that there would be a big, big psychological effect if St. Paul's collapsed or burnt or got damaged. And there were so many... The stories of the priests or the people that ran it that would be out on the roof, and often you would get incendiary bombs that would land on the roof, and they had a whole group of people that was out there just throwing them off as they came, because they just knew psychological power of it. So no, there is a bit of that.
Absolutely.
All right, mate.
All right,
we're all right, we're all surviving, no one's ill yet. Close, you know, it's getting closer. People that you know, friends of friends, and then relatives of friends. So, fingers crossed, touching wood, and hope we're all right. And we'll get together in a few days or a week or so.
Yeah.
Okay, mate.
All right, then.
See ya. Oh, and by the way, just to say, look, anyone who's listening, if you want, you know, if you want to subscribe, I think there's a subscribe button, and then whenever we do one, they come to you automatically and stuff. So. I don't know. Not so eloquent at that. I'm not good at punting my own stuff. I don't feel comfortable with it. Anyway, Jules, I'll see you later. And we'll speak again in a few days.
See ya.
See you, mate.